Luke chapter 6, and we're going to read a couple of verses and jump around a little bit here in the chapter to pick up what we're going to be considering. We're going to start in verse 27, so look at verse 27 and 28, the heart of this Sermon on the Mount. Jesus said, "But I say unto you, which hear, love your enemies, do good to them which hate you, bless them that curse you, and pray for them which despitefully use you." And then verse 35, "But love ye your enemies, and do good, and lend, hoping for nothing again, and your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the Highest, for He is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Be ye therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful." And then verse 39, "And He spake a parable unto them." Can the blind lead the blind? Shall they not both fall into the ditch? The disciple is not above his master, but every one that is perfect shall be as his master. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but perceivest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Either how canst thou say to thy brother, "Brother, let me pull out the mote that is in thine eye," when thou thyself beholdest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite! Cast out first the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to pull out the mote that is in thy brother's eye. For a good tree bringeth not forth corrupt fruit, neither doth a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit, for every tree is known of his own fruit. For of thorns men do not gather figs, nor of a bramble bush gather they grapes. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good. And an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For out of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. Let's take our Bibles and turn to Luke chapter 6. We are in the closing two messages, wrapping up the Sermon on the Mount, in which Jesus Christ is speaking to us about how to be influential in influencing people, how to be effective in influencing people. And we want to consider that again this morning. Do you believe that you have an influence in the lives of people? Do you see your influence to where how you live and what you do is having a influence on people around you, pointing them towards God? Do people follow you in your spiritual life? Do people, as a result of the impact of your life, your presence in their lives, do you see your influence in their lives? That's what Jesus Christ is talking about in the Sermon on the Mount. And we're walking through the Gospel of Luke on Sunday mornings, and we are looking at what God gave to us through the life and ministry of this amazing historian named Luke, as he is giving us the account of Jesus Christ's life, having witnessed, having interviewed eyewitnesses across the land that Jesus lived in, and giving us an accurate, credible, historical picture of the life of Jesus Christ. And for a number of messages, we've been highlighting his Sermon on the Mount that's recorded in Luke chapter 6. This morning we're coming to the conclusion to his sermon. It is a parable and some applications to drive home the point that he's been making in the sermon. He has just selected his team of world changers, a team of men that he's going to assemble around him and entrust to them the mission of evangelizing the world. He's mentoring them. He's coaching them. He is explaining the game plan to them. This team of fishers of men will ultimately change the world. And Jesus Christ is preparing them for that, coaching them in how God will use them to change the world. And so this morning we come to the beginning of His introduction. It'll take us this morning and Lord willing next Sunday morning to delve into the parable and the applications that Jesus Christ gives to us, ultimately, originally gave to those, that first century team, and of course to us as well. And the thought that I want you to come away from this morning with on your mind is the thought, you gotta be mended to mend. You gotta be mended to mend. Can you say that with me? Let's all say it together. You gotta be mended to mend. That's pretty good. Let's say it one more time. You gotta be mended to mend. And Jesus Christ drives this home in a very simple way. Now, how is Jesus Christ going to take this message that He's just preached, and how is He going to put this in perspective to these assembled people that are listening to Him? Well, we're going to answer that question by looking at three phrases. They appear in your little sermon worksheet this morning. And the first phrase is a simple story. A simple story. Verse number 39, the Bible says, "And He spake a parable unto them, can the blind lead the blind?" Now that's an interesting question. Can the blind lead the blind? Well, some have tried. You may like this picture from an elderly couple. Was working their way downtown shopping. Both of which look like they're challenged with regards to their visual abilities. Seems like the gentleman is a little bit more challenged than perhaps I would guess his wife. But looks like she's not all that capable of leading herself. The blind leading the blind. Does it work? Does it work to have the blind? I thought about illustrating it this morning with a couple of children. I thought about bringing a couple of children up, putting blindfolds on both of them, asking one of them to take the other one by the hand and see if they could lead them. And then I was going to put stuff in front of them for them to trip over. But I thought some moms might not get all excited about that visual illustration. So I decided maybe we would forego the blind leading the blind this morning. Here's a picture for those who love Renaissance art. This is a very famous painting from the 1500s from a Dutch painter. His name was Peter Bruegel. 1568 was the date of the painting, actually. Very famous painting in which, and the name of the painting is The Blind Leading the Blind. And of course, you can see the man on the far right lower corner that's lying in a ditch on his back. He's a blind man. Those who have studied this art have discerned that each of the men in this row of men have a different eye disease. Something about the way they're painted. One of them is missing his eyes altogether, and then there's various eye diseases that have taken their sight away. And so we've got the painter who is very familiar with this famous little statement, the blind leading the blind, has pictured for us what happens when the blind leads the blind. And of course, they're all connected together because they all have a stick and they're holding onto the stick that the one in front of them is holding onto. And so they're all holding onto the series of sticks and walking. But the leader, blind, he has fallen into a ditch because the man behind him is blind and is holding onto the stick, he is stumbling into the ditch. And of course, he's holding in a stick that a blind man behind him is holding into and onto, and ultimately he's going to fall into the ditch. And one by one, everyone will fall into the ditch. Because it doesn't work for the blind to lead the blind. Jesus Christ asked it as a question. It's a parable. It's a parable intended to give perspective to the teaching he has just given in the sermon. And so he says to the congregation to whom he is preaching, let me give you a closing illustration. And he gives it as a question. Can the blind lead the blind? And he follows it up with a second question in verse 39. He says, shall they not both fall into the ditch? And the obvious answer is yes. If the blind is leading the blind and the blind falls into a ditch, he will take into the ditch all whom he is following. Now, if you don't like the real picture from American Heritage, or you don't like the Renaissance painting, here's something for the millennials. Here's just some guys blindfolded that are about to fall off a cliff. And we'll just leave that one up there for you to think about here for a few moments. Because Jesus tells a very simple story, a parable used to speak of, that could be used to speak of many different situations in life. And it has been used. In fact, even in the gospel, this little parable is used in different contexts to illustrate different things that have been taught. But in this sermon, in this place, in Luke chapter 6, Jesus Christ is telling a very simple story in order to get the disciples to ponder, to give them perspective on what he has just taught. I could say it this way, even though this little parable about the blind leading the blind could be used in a lot of different contexts to address a lot of different situations, Jesus doesn't leave it up to us to guess what he's talking about. It is a parable at the end of a specific teaching. So we could say then that Jesus Christ told a simple story that teaches simple truth. And that's the second phrase I want you to consider. A simple story that teaches simple truth. What simple truth is Jesus Christ illustrating? What simple truth is Jesus Christ trying to point out to these disciples to give them perspective regarding what he has just taught them? Well, consider two things. Number one, Jesus helped from a practice of unearned love. We've been singing about that all morning. Jesus helped people from a practice of unearned love. You see, verse number 40, immediately after the parable, verse number 40, the disciple is not above his master. How did the master influence people? How did the master go about impacting people with his gospel? Jesus Christ helped people from a practice of unearned love, or as we've been singing this morning, of grace. Amazing grace. Marvelous grace. That God would have grace to intervene in my wicked, sinful life and love me when I didn't deserve to be loved. To do good for me when I didn't deserve anyone to do good for me. To bless me when I didn't deserve anyone to bless me. To appeal for my betterment when I had no interest in his betterment. Grace. Unearned love. Jesus Christ has just taught them. He's mentoring them on how they will evangelize the world. He's put together a team. He said to them, you used to fish for fish, but you're going to fish for men. He's preparing the team to evangelize the world. And to that team, he has been teaching about loving people who don't deserve to be loved. Of being gracious to people that don't deserve your grace. And to wrap it into a conclusion, to give it perspective in real life, Jesus Christ uses a parable and says, can a blind person lead a blind? No, they'll both fall into the ditch. A blind person can't help a blind person. I've helped people, Jesus said. And I helped people because I loved them when they were unlovely. I was kind to them when they hated me. I spoke nicely of those who cursed me. I did good things for the people who tried to hurt me. I related to people on the basis of grace. And you're not better than me. You don't have a better game plan than me. You don't have better ideas of how to influence people than I have. You can't come up with something superior than what I have lived. I influence people by loving them when they hate me. And you can't improve on that game plan. You can't improve on that strategy. You see, these disciples are going to be sent to spiritually blind people to bring them the gospel that will give them sight. I put the verse from 2 Corinthians on your little worksheet there. The little worksheet has 2 Corinthians chapter 4 where the Bible says, "But if our gospel be hid, it's hid to them that are lost, in whom the God of this world hath blinded the minds of them that believe not." You see, we take the gospel of light to blind people. Lest the Satan doesn't want people to get that message, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. For we preach not ourselves, but Christ Jesus the Lord. We are, and ourselves, your servants for Jesus' sake. And so these people are going to be sent out to evangelize the world. They're going to take the gospel of light to spiritually blind people. And Jesus Christ influenced people by being gracious to them. And then he asks us, do you think someone who's blind can help someone who's blind? Do you think you're better than I am? The disciple is not above his master. The team must understand that to be effective on Jesus' team, you cannot ignore the character and model the character of the master. Jesus said, you're not above me. The disciple's not above his master, but everyone that is perfect shall be as his master. If you're going to be effective on my team, you've got to become like me. You think you can come up with a better plan? You think you can figure out a better strategy to evangelize the world? You'll be like a blind person trying to help blind people. And it won't work. You see, you've got to become like me. Gracious, loving, kind to the people who curse you and hate you and do you wrong. You've got to become like me to be effective on my team. You can't come up with a better strategy. You're not better than me. You're not smarter than me. You can't come up with higher genius than what I have come up with. My strategy is to love the unlovely. He articulated it earlier in the chapter, didn't we? We read it a moment ago in verse number 27 and 28. Jesus helped people from a position of unearned love. Jesus loved his enemies. Jesus did good deeds to those who hated him. Jesus spoke kindly of those who cursed him. Jesus sought the welfare of those who wanted to destroy him. That was Jesus' life. That was the way he operated. That was his genius of influence. He influenced people by grace in the way he treated them, winning him the opportunity to influence them. This was who Jesus was. It was from this vantage point that he reached down and lifted up those who were conquered by their sin. This was Jesus' genius at work. Influencing people flows out of loving people, even the most unlovely of people. And the team must understand they don't have a superior game plan. That's why he said in verse 40 that the disciple's not above his master. You're not above me. You don't have a better plan. You don't have a greater genius. You have to become like me. He said every team player that is perfect. That word perfect is an interesting word. The English word perfect is used to translate a couple of specific Greek words, one of which means to be whole or well-balanced or fully developed. That is not the word here that is translated perfect or perfect, or perfect. The word translated perfect here is the other Greek word. It means to mend or repair something that is broken. It was used of the disciples dragging their fishing nets up onto the shore in the morning after fishing all night long, and then mending the holes that had been ripped in the net during the night of fishing. It was used in the medical profession of taking a person whose bone was broken and pulling it back into position, or setting the bone, repairing the broken, mending what was broken. It was used in Galatians 6 metaphorically of how we as Christian people go to another person who has broken with sin in their life, and we help to mend, we help to repair what is broken in their life by taking the Word of God to them. Jesus Christ is saying, the person who has been mended by me, the person who has been repaired by me, must become like me, because you are my instrument to mend other people. You are my tool to repair other people. And in order for you to be able to mend other people, you have to be mended. He that is mended must be as his master. Those whom I have fixed what's wrong in your life, you then become like me. What is Jesus like? He loves his enemies. He does good things to people who do bad things to him. He speaks well of people who curse him. He appeals to God to work in the lives of the people that want to destroy him. That's Jesus. That's his game plan. That's how you influence people. And then Jesus said, if I fixed you, you must become like me. Because what good is a blind person to a blind person? What good are you in evangelizing the world if you're not mended? If you're not like me? If you have a heart that hates people when they do you wrong? If you have a critical spirit that talks down to people who told a lie about you? If you have a heart that is unkind and caustic and rude to people, what good are you to me on my team? Do you think the blind can lead the blind? You think you with a caustic heart can be effective in winning a soul to Christ? You think you can contribute to the team winning a game? What good are you on the team if you're not like me and love and are kind and considerate to people who don't deserve your kindness? You've got to operate under my genius. You've got to learn my strategy. You must accept my game plan. If you're going to be first string material on my team, you've got to get on the team with me. I'm not changing to follow your genius of how to be effective. You've got to become like I am to be effective. Or else you're just a blind person out there trying to help blind people see, and you're of no good to me whatsoever. So we could say, you got to be mended to mend. I mean, you've got to be mended. You say, well, I just don't like it when they lie about me. You've got to be mended. Oh, but that person did me wrong, and it just makes me so mad, and I just, you've got to be mended. Your heart is a problem. You've got an issue. You're unusable to the coach. He's going to have to leave you sit on the bench all the time. He's never going to put you in the game. Because a blind person can't lead a blind person. A person whose heart is not mended with grace cannot help another person find grace. So you have to be mended in order for you to be good at mending other people, to be useful in God's purpose and plan. Well, so after having said that, Jesus Christ addresses the situation that exists on his team when a member doesn't become like him. So you've got a team, and you've got some players on the team, and the coach has told them the game plan. Here's how we're going to win games. Here's how we're going to influence people. Here's how we're going to be effective in evangelism. Here's how we're going to reach the world. You've got to do it from a position of grace. That's how I do it. That's how I influence people. Jesus says, I love those who hate me. I do good for those that for those who do bad things to me. I speak well of those who speak mean of me. I pray to God for God's blessing on the very people that are trying to destroy me. That's the way I live. Now Jesus says, you've got to live like that. You've got to become like me. And then the Christian says, I just can't do that. I just can't do that. There's no way I'm going to buy a gift to a person for a person that costs me a job promotion. There's no way I'm going to pray for God to bless the person who's trying to cut my throat. And there's just no way I'm going to love my enemy. I can't do that. So Jesus Christ deals with that situation. He does it by giving us kind of like, I call it a parable within a parable. In verse number 41, he says and this is all linked together. These are not unrelated statements. These are all interrelated. He says, and why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye and perceivest not the beam that is in thine own eye? And this picture. Well, here's a little cartoon picture of it. It's a silly little cartoon picture, but it's a cartoon picture nonetheless of a guy that says, aha, you've got a speck in your eye. This is Holy Joe Christian that's going to fix everybody else's problems. And he's got an eye for your problem. The only crazy thing is he's got a big old beam sticking out of his eye. And here's another little cartoon picture of it. Somebody says, hey, dude, this had to have been done by a millennial. Hey, dude, is that the way the millennials talk? No, they don't talk like that. I think I got something in my eye. And so the team member says, hey, don't worry, I'll help you get it out. As he swings the beam around. What's Jesus teaching here? What's Jesus saying? It's a simple little story, simple little parable within a parable. He says, you know, if you're of the nature that you are trying to help somebody else, you see the context, you know, or the statement is that they say in verse 42, let me pull out the mote that is in thine eye. And so here's a person who wants to be effective. They want to be influential. They want to go on soul winning. They want to share the gospel. They want to give out tracts. They want to help a person who has a speck in their eye that's keeping them from being able to see. And so they come and they want to help. I want to help you. Let me help you. But Jesus says the problem is they've got a great big old beam sticking out of their own eye. How can you help somebody with the little splinter in their eye when you've got a big beam sticking out of your eye? That doesn't work. You're a hypocrite. You say you're wanting to help them conquer the sin in their life, but in reality you refuse to let God conquer the sin in your life. Your heart is caustic, critical, hateful, and yet you say you want to help an unsaved person get saved when your heart hadn't even been fixed by grace. And so Jesus Christ says the hypocrites can't help hurting people. It won't work. And so Jesus Christ says you're a hypocrite. You know what a hypocrite is? A hypocrite is a person who acts like something that they really aren't on the inside. So here's a hypocrite. On the inside, he has a critical heart. A heart that's mean-spirited. A heart that is not gracious. They have a heart that is hateful. And yet on the outside, they want to go out and help people that are unsaved. They want to be used of God to share a gospel tract. And on the outside, they're portraying themselves to be someone who wants to help others escape the sin condemnation in their life, when in reality, their heart is hateful. Like a person with a beam sticking out of their eye trying to help someone with a splinter in their eye. And so Jesus Christ said, you want to be effective in helping that other person get the speck out of their eye, then you've got to get rid of the beam out of your eye. You've got to get your heart fixed. You've got to be able to live by grace. You've got to get to the point where you can love the people who hate you. Do good to the people who want to hurt you. To speak nicely of those who curse you. And to ask God to bless the ones who want to destroy you. That's what it means to take the beam out of your eye in the context of this sermon, that Jesus is using this picture to illustrate the point of his sermon. And the point of his sermon is, you influence people by loving them, even when they're unlovely. And so Jesus Christ tells his disciples that you've got to get rid of the beam out of your eye in order for you to be able to help the person who is in need of help. And so I must be brought into conformity to the character of Jesus. I must be like him to be used by him. I must develop a genuine love for unlovely people so he can use me to carry out the genius of his game plan. To love the enemies and do good to those who hate and speak kindly of those who curse and do seek the welfare of those who want to destroy me. And then, it is then that I have become like him. And now I fit in the game plan. Now he can use me to influence people for his glory because now I fit his genius of a game plan for evangelizing the world. And so he told a simple story that teaches a very simple truth because of simple logic. You see, verse number 43 begins with the word for, and verse number 44 begins with the word for. Do you notice that? The word for is a little conjunction that speaks of a reason or the motivation, the reason why this argument works, the logic behind this argument. And so this simple parable, this simple story about, it doesn't work for blind people, leave blind people. This simple story that teaches a simple truth. You can't help people until you become grace-filled. And the reason why you can't help people till you become grace-filled is because of simple logic. What's the simple logic? Well, for this reason. Here's the logic behind it. Here's the reason behind it. Verse number 43. He says, "For a good tree bringeth not forth corrupt fruit, neither doth a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit." And this is simple logic. Jesus is very simple in his presentation of logic. He says in verse number 44, every tree is known of his own, by his own fruit. For of thorns men do not gather figs, nor of a bramble bush gather they grapes. You don't go up to an apple tree expecting to pick peaches. You don't go up to a briar bush and look for apples. I mean, it's a simple logic. The fruit is a reflection of the reality of the bush. And if the reality of your heart is that you curse those who curse you, and you're mean to those that are mean to you, and you hope they get what's coming to them because of what they did to you, if that's who you are, no one's going to come to you and expect grace. Because grace doesn't come out of hateful, critical hearts. Simple logic. Apples don't grow on pear trees. Out of the good heart of a good man. And who's a good heart of a good man in the context of the sermon that's been preached? It's someone who loves their enemies, does good to those who despitefully use them, blesses those that curse them, and prays for those who despitefully use them. That's good. That's what a good man is. Someone who is like Jesus Christ, who operates on the genius of Jesus Christ's principles. Out of a good man, what comes out of a good man? Good fruit. You want to be influential? You want to help people? You want to be used of God to bring salvation to people? You can't get good fruit out of a corrupt heart. You get good fruit out of a good heart. It's simple logic. And so Jesus Christ said, for this reason. This is why I can't use you. For this reason. Verse number 43 and 44 outlines that
And then he concludes it in verse 45. He says, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good. An evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. Simple logic. The reason why God can't use a critical, spirited person is because you can't get good fruit out of a corrupt heart. It's simple logic. So for that reason, we have to be mended if we're going to mend others. We have to become like Christ if we're going to be valuable to Christ. We've got to be molded around His game plan if we're going to help His team win the game. We have to become grace-filled people to be used of God to bring grace to sinful people. We must grow in likeness to Jesus Christ and love the unlovely as He did. And from that heart will flow acts of kindness to others who don't deserve your kindness. And will open opportunities to influence them with the gospel that will rescue their souls from sin, hell, and Satan by bringing them into the peace and love of God for all of eternity. Because my heart is operating on the basis of grace. And I don't give people what they deserve. I don't tell them what they deserve. And I don't pray God will give them what they deserve. And I don't feel towards them what they deserve. Because if I do, I'm just a blind person trying to help a blind person escape the ditch of hell. And it doesn't work. I have to be mended in order to mend. So why should I mature as a Christian? Why should I grow as a Christian? This is a call to maturity. He's coaching a team. He's saying, guys, we got to win this game. I need 100% out of my team. I need everyone to step up their game. I need everyone to grow, to mature, to be like me. I need everyone to, come on now, I need you to win this. What's the motivation behind spiritual maturity and spiritual growth and developing Christ-like love for unlovely people? Why? It's so that I can be productive on Jesus' team. So my life can impact unsaved people, pointing them toward Christ. It's out of the abundance of a mended, repaired heart that my mouth can offer words of love and instruction to spiritually blind people groping in the dark. I don't know about you, but I really want God to use me. We live in a difficult time in American culture where people are skeptical. They have believed the lies of evolutionists and atheists. They've written God off as just some make-believe person that my grandparents trusted in. So much of our culture has bought the lies of our educational institutions. They've been influenced away from any trust in God. I want God to use me in the lives of those blind people. I want God to use me to influence others. I don't want to live my life all about fun and games and enjoying life and get to the end and at least I made it to heaven. I want my life to count on the team. I want to accomplish something with my life. I want people that I rub shoulders with to be influenced by my God. And that can't help. That can't happen unless my heart has become like Christ's heart. And I have the grace-filled ability to love people who hate me. And say nice things about people who curse me. And it's only when my heart becomes like the heart of my God of grace that I can become a catalyst for the miracle-working gospel to save souls and influence people and change lives. That's the motivation behind spiritual growth. That's the motivation behind development in Christ-likeness, because I want to be able to mend others. But I can't mend until I've been mended. I can't bring grace from a vessel filled with criticism and hate. I must be mended in order to mend the people that rub shoulders with me. Do you want your life to count? Do you want to influence people? Jesus has told us the genius of what's behind it. And then He looks to us to bow before Him and say, "Oh God, change my heart. God, help me to become like Jesus Christ. Help me to stop being so critical. Help me to stop thinking so negatively. God, help me to become like Jesus Christ so that You can use me to influence people around me."